the leader. Len, well, you are getting excoriated by Brendan Sharkey. He's blasting the GOP that you didn't bring any votes yesterday, yet many of the ideas they say that they put together were ideas that came out of those joint sessions with the governor. What do you say about this?
Well, in no uncertain terms, Brendan did not tell the truth when he wrote that statement. He knows the conditions for which we are. First of all, we asked to be in the room. We wanted to be in the room. They wanted us in the room because they couldn't agree. The Democrats couldn't agree. The governor couldn't agree with Senator Looney and Senator Representative Sharkey. So they asked us to be in the room because if they could agree, they never would have had us in the room to begin with. So we went in. We had three conditions. Number one, we identify the problem by a number. And we did that. Number two, we make it public. And I want to make it public because I want to make sure we solve the problem if we got kicked out of the room or couldn't agree, that the problem was known by the press, how much the debt was, so that they couldn't settle for something less. And then number three was we would agree to a budget deal if there were structural changes that rolled out to the future. Those were the three conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And we got in a room. We repeated those conditions. Halfway through, we repeated those conditions and asked, does anybody have a misunderstanding of why we're in the room? And the answer was no. So they knew that we would bring votes if there were structural changes. We couldn't come to an agreement on the structural changes. And they knew they weren't going to get votes. And the proof of that pudding is a few things. You don't see Senator Looney or Senator Duff or Representative Eric Zimowitz, the majority leader in the House, saying anything close to what, or the governor, saying anything close to what Speaker Sharkey said, because they know the truth. And the truth is, we did talk about cuts, we had great exchanges, it was great meetings, very good, very thorough. And they took some of our suggestions, we backed out on some of our stuff, listening to their suggestions, but when it came to structural changes that rolled out in the future, so we wouldn't have deficit after deficit after deficit after deficit, they refused to do that.
Now, structural changes, is that code word for labor concessions and pension changes and the like? I mean, what are structural?
No, not at all.
Okay, well, no, but I want to know what are, I mean, I'd like to see structural changes in that regard. What are other structural changes?
Structural changes, certainly contracts are a subset.
Right.
Structural changes would be voting on contracts.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The legislature have a right to vote. Putting in our constitutional cap for spending that we passed with the income tax in 1991 that was never done, according to the Attorney General, said, yeah, you're right, doesn't exist. We said, let's put it in. We promised the state of Connecticut that's a structural change because it controls how much you could spend.
Okay.
Another structural change is closing the Connecticut Juvenile Training Center, which is bad public policy because kids are not getting the right treatment. We've had public hearings after public hearings, all of which concluded it's a bad place, and it costs $543,000 per person to house there. And the idea is we all know we could do it cheaper, and we all know we can get it. We could get the treatment these kids need as opposed to being slammed to the floor and hogtied while they're on the ground, which was deplorable, and everybody condemned those procedures. So when it came down to doing the right thing for those kids and closing that facility down and saving money, it was, well, until you can agree, they said. By the way, they had it in their package, and then the union called up and said, you got to take it out.
Yeah, because there were no assurances that the jobs would be there. Okay, so I understand those things. But, you know, what I was saying yesterday was that I think in many ways there was one person in Connecticut who was a real audience for this special session, because frankly, with all of the discretion that has been left to the governor in this, there are things that he could have done on his own. Maybe the number was too large for him to do it on his own, and he needed a special session. But to me, he was talking to Jeff Immelt. He was talking to GE and, of course, other companies. And what he was saying was, I'm going to get you assurance that our transportation needs are going to be dealt with, and we're going to have a lockbox for that. And that didn't get enough votes in the House until you could put it on the ballot, at least until, you know, 2018. And I didn't see any structural changes because they're looking over the horizon, as you are mentioning. And I don't see anything in this that would give them comfort. Now, there were some tax cuts for them, but would you agree that they were the primary audience for what happened yesterday?
Tough call on that, but I would say that clearly with respect to the business end, and if the governor was trying to send in the word of predictability and stability in the state of Connecticut budgeting, then I think there would have been a harder push, I would argue, by the Democrats and the governor for that predictability and for that stability in budgeting. I frankly did not see that big a push because the structural changes were rejected. Clearly on the business end for the taxes and the constitutional lockbox, which both of which had wide bipartisan support, you would be correct. But I think on the predictability and stability, we need to tell businesses that we're on a different course. You know, the governor agreed with some of the things that we brought up in the room that he thought were good structural changes were rejected by the majority party, even though the governor thought they were pretty good ideas. I don't see that big a push, so I'm not sure I would agree in total part. I agree substantially with your statement, but not in totality.
No, I understand. But what did we really cut? I mean, I don't even understand it. I mean, what we really cut here.
You know, when they say cut, let's be clear. What they basically said was, we're out of money, so we're not going to spend it on this, we're not going to spend on that. That's their cuts. And when we left the room, when we were in the room, we had $350 million worth of cuts and some changes. When we left the room in terms of we couldn't agree anymore, and when I say left the room, we left collectively, not just Republicans. We walked out of the room and said, sorry, this was great, but we can't come to agreement. They went and found over $100 million of one-time revenue sweeps, taking out of this fund and sweeping that fund and taking it, and one-time revenues to solve the problem, which means you haven't solved any problem. You just fixed it for that moment in time, and you're left with bigger problems at the end in 2017 and the out years. And those are the structural changes we think should be done. Taking 20% off citizen election fund is a $3.3 million. Is it more important to cut Medicaid, or is it more important for us to be able to send out flyers in the mail about our reelection? I would suggest we want to cut our flyers and put more money into Medicaid. At least that's the Republican philosophy. The Democrats said, no, we want all our money for campaigning. Don't worry about the Medicaid. And they cut, you know, an extra $4 million out of Medicaid. So those are the types of decisions we were looking for.
Well, what was not lost on me is that they delayed taking some of the money and putting it into a dedicated approach to transportation from the sales tax for a couple of months at the same time that they were trying to pass a lockbox. I mean, that tells you all that you need to know about their inability to really think about these things in serious terms long term. I mean, to me it does. I'll tell you what, we don't have a lot of time today, but I really appreciate you coming by. Let me take one question for you from Neil, and then we'll get you back again soon. State Senator Len Fasano. Neil, what do you have on your mind?
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Senator Fasano, help me with this, please. I said to Speaker Sharkey that Connecticut has over $80 billion in liabilities. He said no. He said considerably less. I don't believe that. Do you have a number or an approximation for me?
I think you're closer than he is. I believe it to be $70 billion, but that's my understanding. I'm not at the Senate, so I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I believe it to be $70 billion of unfunded liabilities.
Yeah, could you get back to Larry with that number possibly, sir?
Absolutely. I will have it over to him before.
Yeah, because a couple of years ago, Senator McKinney researched it, and he came back with $83 billion, and I don't see that we took anything off that number.
We did
that. I'm sure you'll come. Pardon me?
Yes, you would be right that we haven't, certainly since Senator McKinney has left, we haven't taken anything off that number.
Yeah, well, you'll get back to us, and thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much. And Len Fasano, I want to thank you again for coming by today. A long day yesterday, and we will talk to you in the near future, okay?